Throughout the 18th century, there remained a considerable amount of confusion in distinguishing between orangutans, chimpanzees, and gorillas. The orangutan was the first to be recognized as a distinct genus, only because of its remote habitat in Asia. It was not until 1847, on the basis of a single skull from Gabon, that the gorilla was confirmed as a separate genus from the chimpanzee. Just as there are separate subspecies among orangutan and chimpanzee, there are separate subspecies of gorilla, also with morphological variations related primarily to habitat. In Western Africa, there remain some 9,000 to 10,000 lowland gorilla, gorilla in the wild. It is this subspecies most frequently seen in captivity and mounted in museum collections. Some 1,000 miles to the east within the Virunga volcanoes of Zaire, Uganda, and Rwanda lived the last surviving mountain gorillas, Gorilla beringi, the subject of my field study. Only about 240 mountain gorillas remain in the wild. None are found in captivity. The third subspecies is known as the eastern lowland gorilla, Gorilla graweri. Only about 4,000 graweri remain in the wild, mainly in eastern Zaire, and less than 24 live in captivity. There are some 29 morphological differences between the lowland and the mountain gorilla, adaptations related to altitudinal variations. The mountain gorilla, the more terrestrial of the two and living at the highest altitude in the gorilla's range, has longer body hair, more expanded nostrils, a broader chest girth, a more pronounced sagittal crest, shorter arm limbs, a longer palate, and shorter, broader hands and feet. In the wild, only some 4,000 gorillas, including all three subspecies, now live in reputedly protected areas. Advocates for establishing captive gorilla populations thus feel justified in attempting to preserve this most endangered of the great apes in zoos or similar institutions. Because of the strong kinship bonds of gorilla families, the capture of one young gorilla may involve the slaying of many of its familial group, and certainly not every animal collected from the wild reaches its destination alive. Moreover, 3 times more gorillas have been taken from the wild than have been born in captivity. And gorilla deaths in confinement continue to outnumber gorilla births. I cannot concur with those who advocate saving gorillas from extinction by killing and capturing more free-living individuals, only to exhibit them in confinement. Conservation of any endangered species must begin with stringent efforts to protect its natural habitat by the enforcement of rigid legislation against human encroachment into parks and other game sanctuaries. Next, confinement facilities should be encouraged to extend new and promising programs that replace solitary wire and cement cages with more natural group settings, rather than to expend energy on acquiring additional exotic species for display. For captive gorillas, trees should be available to climb, and materials such as straw, branches, or bamboo supplied for nest building. Food could be allotted in small portions throughout the day and require some degree of preparation, such as peeling and stripping of stalks, or even searching for randomly distributed items supplied at various locations within the enclosure. Access to the outdoors should be provided. Contrary to popular opinion, gorillas greatly enjoy basking in the sun. Of prime importance to the reclusive gorilla are obscured niches where captive animals may withdraw as desired, not only from the presence of people, but also from one another, as is the species' habit in the wild. Those bearing the heavy responsibility of caring for captive gorillas should be encouraged to exchange so-called non-breeders between populations, an inherent process.